Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded February 11th, 2023. This past week, Canadian forces redeployed a CP-140 Aurora surveillance plane from its dedicated mission, assisting U.S.-led drug smuggling interdiction efforts in the Caribbean, to spend 2 days flying reconnaissance over Haiti. Foreign Affairs Minister Melanie Joly characterized the escalation of Canada's military involvement in the country as a, quote, demonstration of Canada's commitment to Haiti. Last month, Canada demonstrated that commitment in the form of an unspecified number and type of armored vehicles being sold to a government that has already called for foreign military intervention to quell widespread public discontent with its corrupt and entirely unelected leadership. Yves Engler is an independent Montreal-based journalist and author. He's written 12 books on Canadian foreign policy, including Canada and Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority, co-authored with Anthony Fenton. His recent article, Ottawa's Support for Repressive Haitian Police Grows as Democracy Fades, appears at his website, yvesengler.com, and puts to the lie again Canada's so-called concern for the people of that benighted island. Yves Engler in the first half. And the University of Victoria's Student Union has become another front in the Ukraine-Russia war. Last month, UVic's Ukrainian Student Society alleged harassment of its members and intimidation in the form of hate crime graffiti scrawled on one of its posters. Tyan Cherepushka is an undergraduate student at the University of Victoria and is a Ukrainian-Canadian who until recently served as vice president to the UVic chapter of the Ukrainian-Canadian Students Union, or SUSC. And Tyson Strandland is a member of both the UVic chapter of the Young Communist League and the Vancouver Island Peace Council, a local chapter of the Canadian Peace Congress. He, too, is a Canadian of Ukrainian descent who has studied in and visited Ukraine both before and after the 2014 Maidan coup. Ian Cherepushka and Tyson Strandland on bringing the Ukraine conflict to Canadian campuses in the second half. But first, Yves Engler and Canada's caring military gestures. Welcome back to the program, Yves. Prime Minister Trudeau remarked last month in a press conference in Mexico City on the occasion of Canada's first delivery of armored vehicles to Haiti, quote, for the past 3 decades, we've engaged in Haiti in many different ways, many different situations, et cetera, et cetera. Yves, as we near the 20th anniversary of the second coup against the duly elected Haitian president Jean-Bertrand Aristide, what did Canada's engagement in that situation then look like?
Well, yeah. 2 decades ago, or 19 years ago, Canada helped overthrow the elected president and thousands of elected officials. Canada actually sent troops to Port-au-Prince with the French and American troops. The elected president Aristide said that U.S. Marines kidnapped him, put him on a plane, and dumped him in the Central African Republic. Canadian special forces were securing the airport that evening. The Port-au-Prince airport, not the Montreal airport or the Ottawa airport, but the Haitian airport. And supported a coup government that killed thousands of people. And since that time, the coup is part of what led to the creation of the core group. The core group is basically U.S., Canada, France, U.N. representative, and a couple other countries. And it's been a determinant force in Haitian politics over the past 2 decades. And the core group actually has its roots in the Ottawa Initiative on Haiti, which was a meeting held on January 31st and February 1st of 2003, so 20 years ago, where Canadian officials, American officials, French officials decided that Aristide must go, Haiti should be put under UN trusteeship, and that the Haitian military could be recreated. 13 months later, Aristide is gone. Haiti is put under UN trusteeship for, you know, at least 13 years, arguably, you know, continues to be. And the Haitian military has been partially recreated. So Canada has been this aggressive force in Haiti for 2 decades, very clear imperialist force. And that continues, right? Just today, Justin Trudeau here, we're on, I guess we're February 11th. And Trudeau announced that he's going to go to the CARICOM upcoming Caribbean community meeting, and it's all about pushing CARICOM to intervene in Haiti. And he states that pretty clearly in his tweet and statement. So the Canadian government is the U.S. is the big player. The U.S. has been the historical terrorizer of Haiti for a century now. But over the past 20 years specifically, and before that a bit, Canada has played the secondary role, and in the last recent months, you know, Canada has been right at the center of pushing this this international force to reoccupy Haiti, and they're having problems at the UN. I think that the Russians and the Chinese have blocked the UN Security Council resolution, and so I think that's causing them some difficulties with regards to getting the Caribbean countries to join a foreign mission. And I think the Canadian military may be a little bit ambivalent about leading that mission, but clearly the Canadian government has taken this as a top priority, and let's just say this is not about helping Haiti get out from under its biggest problem, which is lack of sovereignty and a lack of democracy, because Canada has been undermining Haitian sovereignty and democracy now for at least two decades.
The PMO's office said about his visit to Nassau February 15th and 16th for the CARICOM meetings, the PM, quote, "The PM will drive progress on shared priorities, including continued support for the Haitian people." But that support that Canada provides, and I use scare quotes around that word, for Haiti, has largely been support for the military and for the militarized police. Canada's big contribution was sending a huge and longstanding contingent of RCMP. And in your article, Ottawa's support for repressive Haitian police grows as democracy fades. You categorize that support as the militarization of, or characterize rather, that support as the militarization of Haitian police. Should we be surprised that Canada's paramilitary police would go down and create something in its own image, a paramilitary Haitian police?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's even worse than that, in that they really, after the coup in 2004, what they did was they took the former military, the Haitian military was disbanded by Aristide back in 95 because it had overthrown many governments. It overthrew his government in 1991. And it was basically used as a tool of Washington to keep the population in check. And huge, incredible amounts of human rights violations. So what we did after the coup was we brought in hundreds of former military into the Haitian police force, and they former military dominated the upper echelons of the police force. And to a certain extent, it was a sort of repayment for the paramilitary forces that had attacked the Aristide government for a number of years, which was part of the pretext used to justify the U.S., French, Canadian invasion. So they basically, these former military helped destabilize the Aristide government. And so what we want, there is, though, I think, a tension in Canadian policy vis-a-vis the Haitian police. Now, the clearest Canadian support in Haiti over the past 20 years has been for the Haitian police. Hundreds of millions of dollars in aid money have been gone into the Haitian police. As you mentioned, for Canada led the UN policing component for 13 years. So Canadian RCMP agents, Sûreté du Québec, were training the Haitian police and were overseeing the other UN police that were also involved in training the Haitian police. The Canadian government wants and has all tried to build up, increase the size of the Haitian police, so strengthen the repressive apparatus of the Haitian state. And that in and of itself, of course, should be quite controversial, in that, you know, there are problems of insecurity in Haiti, but there are bigger problems of people not having access to food or education. And so prioritizing the repressive element of the Haitian state is a major political choice that I don't think that most Haitians prefer. But the Canadian government is in a little bit of a tension. So on one hand, they want a police force that will be relatively professional, let's call it, like not too corrupt, will basically, you know, oversee the inequitable Haitian system where, you know, 15 families mostly run the economy, keep the people sort of, you know, when people go on strike at the sweatshops for higher wages, keep it in check, aren't like terrorizing capitalists, aren't you know, demanding fees of aren't kidnapping, aren't demanding fees of wealthy people and whatnot. So they want a sort of certain degree of professionalism in the Haitian police force, because that's good for foreign investors. Now, on the other side, they want a police force that will intervene politically to prop up unelected U.S. Canadian-backed governments, and the type of people who tend to be willing to overthrow a government that is, you know, pro-poor or challenging U.S. Canadian dominance of the country, the type of police who are willing to do that tend to be people who are also willing to demand bribes, willing to kidnap, and which of course leads to a certain degree of instability from the perspective of foreign investors or, you know, foreign capitalists or local capitalists.
Well, you cite in your article that a good number of the police are drawn from the military, as you say, but they also happen to have gang connections as well. So you've got them playing both sides of the fence. You cite Kevin Walby and Jeffrey Monahan's book, Haitian Paradox, in talking about the makeup of the police in Haiti and Canada's role and what happened when these authors petitioned through Freedom of Information documents about what Canada was doing with all these tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars that have been funneled down into Haitian police and military activities over these last years. What happened with that petition and those authors' experience?
Well, they got basically denied access to the documents, and they state in their article that they were basically, the Canadian government took their requests for information very seriously and tried to block access to the information, and that they also point out, which is clear from anyone who's been observing, which is that the Canadian government takes the Haitian police very seriously. And, you know, delivering light armored vehicles with Canadian military aircraft to the Haitian police, as they did back in October, and then they did again a few weeks ago.
Is that Eve, what they are, though? Because I tried to find exactly what military vehicles were being sent by or sold. I don't know if it's some kind of lend lease arrangement or what, but the details of what they are seem to be the government's holding even that close to the chest.
Yeah, they're not as militarized as the light armored vehicles that are being sent to Saudi Arabia. Those light armored vehicles sent to Saudi Arabia have like machine guns and stuff on the top. They're clearly tanks. They're really essentially tanks. But the ones that are being sent to Haiti are sort of I'm not an expert in that domain at all, but are sort of for police forces to go into go in hard into neighborhoods where they might target so-called gangsters. It might be used for crowd control, a repressive attack against a big demonstration, and go in with a couple of these vehicles and fire tear gas and whatnot. So it's been a big issue in Haiti. It's been a very big issue in Haitian politics, that whole question. But part of what's happened is that the dissent, Canada has backed this PHTK government, most recent facet with Ariel Henry, who's unelected, unpopular, unconstitutional, who we really just like appointed 18 months ago with the U.S. and Canada led core group appointed 18 months ago. The things have descended to the point where the Haitian police actually appear, I hate to say this, almost like progressive, in that there really is a big problem with gangs. Gangs have taken control over big chunks of the country, and those gangs have been empowered by the politicians that we have been backing over the past decade. Those gangs have been empowered by the 15 families, the wealthy elite that we have been backing over the past, at least a decade ago, more. So there really is this descent of Haitian political life and just general, insecurity questions that makes the police look like a sort of positive force in that context.
Yeah, well, they embarrassed the president when he was Ariel Henry was landing. He had been in Argentina, and just a couple of weeks ago now, the police went and set up a demonstration at the airport itself and protested the prime minister in front of the cameras.
Yeah, and they did so in part because a bunch of police had been killed. Because in fighting with gangs, a bunch of police have been killed, and so this is, and the police have also empowered the gangs, right? Like there's you know, it's been shown that it's like half of the police have been or thought to have like connections to the gang. So there's no good side in this you know picture. But the bigger picture from the Canadian perspective is that we have intervened to undermine the political forces in Haiti that are the alternative, right? When the Aristide and the Famille Lavalas, and then after 2006, the Préval government, to a certain extent, those are the sort of forces that are trying to redress this incredible inequity in the country, this incredible foreign domination of the country. And we have intervened to undermine those forces and to prop up the most socially regressive forces in Haiti, and so you know the where things have come to today is sort of like the logical conclusion of this complete descent. Now, I don't actually believe the Canadian government wants the current situation in Haiti. This is no longer good for capitalists. For foreign capitalists, don't benefit when there's that level of insecurity. So what they want is this sort of like drastic inequity in the country. So they have, you know, they can pay, you know, these women $5 a day to stitch T-shirts for Canadian Guild and Activewear so that, you know, Canadian mining companies have complete access to, you know, prospect the whole country. So they want this vast inequity, but they want to sort of contain it, you know, with a sort of a repressive state apparatus, sort of basically return to the François Jean-Claude Duvalier dictatorships, where you had these repressive state apparatus that kept the population in check. It was very good for making baseballs and producing T-shirts, and Haiti is this low-wage sweatshop zone. But now the situation today has sort of spiraled so far out of control that the Canada's, you know, support for the police can be argued has a sort of, you know, almost has a sort of positive element to it, even though at a big picture level, of course, it's all part of, you know, this desire to build up the repressive apparatus of the Haitian state to not redress the vast inequities that exist in the country, and to have this security force that's tied to the U.S. and Canada that is basically a stick that they can use if there's ever a government or there's ever political movements that are, you know, breaking away from foreign domination. But it's grim, and I think the first phase from a Canadian perspective, and when you have Justin Trudeau running around talking about Haitian solutions to Haitian problems and going to the CARICOM and trying to pressure Caribbean community countries to engage in Haiti, the first thing to say is that, okay, you have to at least a minimum apologize for 2004 coup. Apologize for intervening to appoint Michel Martelly as president in 2010, which the U.S. and Canada did. Apologize for having appointed Ariel Henry and 18 months ago, and having the country disintegrate even further. And then, you know, maybe talk about some reparations, and then maybe we can take, you know, your rhetoric about Haitian solutions or your rhetoric about you know, getting the Caribbean countries to, you know, take care about Haiti. Maybe then we can, you know, take you a little bit seriously.
Yeah, well, this Canadian pining for the good old days sounds like the Americans that wax poetic about the days of Dixie. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Yves Engler. Yves is an independent Montreal-based journalist and author. He's written 12 books on Canadian foreign policy, including Canada and Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority, that co-authored with Anthony Fenton. His recent article, we're talking ostensibly around today, Ottawa's support for repressive Haitian police grows as democracy fades. You can find that at Yves' website, eveengler.com. Well, Yves, when you talk about Haitian solution or Haitians solving Haitian problems. Or Bob Ray was talking about that just a couple of weeks ago, when the topic of intervention, another foreign intervention in Haiti, was brought up, with Canada perhaps playing the lead role, and he poo-pooed that. He wanted no part of it. But you cite Roger Jordan and Keith Jones writing for WSWS, World Socialist website, and their article is, Canada preparing to lead new military intervention in imperialist ravaged Haiti. That article from just before Christmas. How does this Aurora flight, which looks all the world like a mapping foray in preparation for some kind of military activity or other, how does that square with Bob Ray saying, no, that Haitians have to solve their own problems and Canada does not want to lead a military operation there?
Well, I think the Canadian government did want to lead a military operation in October or in August and September. I think the Canadian government was preparing to be the lead force with trying to get Caribbean community, maybe Ecuadorian, some other Latin American military and police. And I think that they were planning on that. They were moving forward. They were building towards that. And the Russians and the Chinese opposition to the Security Council, to the UN resolution the Americans and the Mexicans were putting forward, I think that caused a problem for Canadian government, made the Caribbean countries less interested. Alongside that, there was significant protest in the Haitian community in Montreal. I think that there's some sort of political fear on that front as well. So I think Bob Ray is what he said about this recently is him. He was the player. He was a central player in building international support for the intervention. And he's now sort of recalculating things. So the most recent Aurora spy plane that hovered over Haiti for, it's not exactly clear, a day or two, I think that's in large part public relations. The Canadian government was really aggressive in announcing that. They didn't have to do that. They send the Aurora spy plane all over different times and don't announce it, of course, right? But that's the point of it, is that despite the CF-140has been all over around Ukraine and China and it gets, we hear about it every so often, but that's based upon specific dynamics. So I think there's a public relations part to it, and part of that public relations part to it is to build pressure on the Caribbean countries to want to basically say Canada is taking this seriously, and to kind of like pressure them to also take it seriously. Now, concretely, in terms of the military value, I think there is a value, obviously, intelligence of particularly around Port-au-Prince and the more you can know about where different gang leaders are operating, and the more you can find out about that, that's going to be beneficial to any foreign force that intervenes in Haiti, and it's also going to be beneficial to the Haitian police, which I do believe the Canadian government does want to deal with the gang problem. I don't think it does actually serve Canadian capitalist or Haitian, or to a large extent Haitian capitalist interests in the country. So it has spiraled so far out of control that there is a desire to lessen the insecurity in the country. And I think there's also an element of sending this Canadian spy plane is about Canadian relations with Washington, and the U.S. is clearly putting pressure on Canada to be at the center of this mission into Haiti, and this is a way of the Canadian government showing that we're doing something, and we're part of this building up for a force. And the same thing goes with sending the Canadian the armored vehicles. When they sent the armored vehicles back in October, that was with military aircraft. There was absolutely no reason why Canadian and American military aircraft needed to send these vehicles. They could have been brought on some other form of transport, either by boat or some other form of transport aircraft. But that was part of this sort of creating this kind of, we're taking this seriously. And I think at that moment too, it was also about putting pressure on the Caribbean countries. And of course, with Trudeau going to the CARICOM conference in a couple of days, that is the most clear example of putting pressure on CARICOM to get involved. Whether this is successful, I mean, I don't think that, you know, there's real concerns for you send there, you know, the gangs do have some power, right? And you send people who don't know neighborhoods into neighborhoods, even if they have way better guns and, you know, maybe military training or policing training, you send them into neighborhoods where they don't know the population, they don't know the landscape. And then there are people who do know that, do know their neighborhoods, you can get people, you know, people can be killed. And so I think there's some reticence.
Well, yeah, but Minusta, they showed they had the tactics to get around that, didn't they? They just went in and shot everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And then that ended up causing some political problems in Brazil, right? The Brazilian commanders that, you know, that the most infamous massacre was on July 6th of 2005 in Cité Soleil, where they killed like a minimum of 23, mostly women and children. And you can see this one-year-old and three-year-old that died. It's horrible, horrible.
Well, and that's pretty predictable. And you know, sending those armored carriers by air, everybody in Port-au-Prince can look up and see these Hercules planes coming in to the airport. And it's a big show. It's an air show, and it's a show of force. In their article, Canada preparing to lead new military intervention in imperialist ravage to Haiti, and that's one that you cited again by Roger Jordan and Keith Jones at the World Socialist website from the 19th of December past. They quote our Prime Minister Trudeau saying, "We have not taken anything off the table." One of my favorite cliches. But with 30 years of experience in Haiti, we know very well that there are enormous challenges when it comes to interventions. It is clear that our approach has to change this time. So that sounds, even though it begins with that bellicose tome or meme of taking nothing off of the table, that Trudeau even then is saying, no, this isn't going to happen. Has his mind been changed by America since?
I don't know. I think they really are... I think they are testing the winds. They built, if you go back and I follow this very closely, in August, and maybe even have started by the end of July, they led this big campaign to build backing for an international force. Bob Rae flying all around, going to the Dominican Republic, Canadian ambassador. They started this whole push. It looks like it got scuttled. We're now 5 months, 6 months later, and they got cold feet. It's not exactly clear. The big, you know, part of what they're doing here, of course, is they want to back Ariel Henry. They have decided that Ariel Henry is the guy that should lead Haiti, and they want to maintain the PHTK, which is basically, you know, Michel Martelly's now 12 years of PHTK rule in Haiti, which is sort of this sort of, I don't know, gangster kind of oligarchic political party. But so Trudeau is clearly speaking out of both sides of his mouth, as he does on many issues, and there is actually opposite, you know, like the Globe and Mail about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, had a big front page story that talked about how foreign intervention was the last thing that Haiti needed. And it was, you know, very mild when it came to criticism of Canadian intervention. But it did paint this picture of American, long history of American intervention in Haiti. There is, among elite sectors of the Haitian community here in Montreal, they're not on board for it. There's an understanding that, I mean, there was a UN mission, full-fledged UN military occupation in Haiti until 2017. That force then continued, a smaller part of that force continued for a couple more years, and you still have a UN presence in Haiti. It's still a UN mission in Haiti. It's much, much smaller. So it's not like the evidence is in. These UN military occupations have not worked. There's, I think, a pretty wide understanding that Haitian sovereignty needs to be respected, that, you know, what happened in 2004 with the coup was not a success by you know, most serious criteria. So, you know, that is being part of Trudeau's rhetoric is playing to that kind of recognition. But of course, there's really simple things the Canadian government could do if it wanted to respect Haitian sovereignty. The most obvious one is just to say, we no longer participate in the core group. We don't believe that foreign ambassadors should get together and determine Haitian affairs. We leave the core group. If Trudeau was at all serious about Haitian-led solutions to the country's problems, it's a simple thing.